So what I want to do today, as I talk about mining pearls for play, experiential theology, and life lessons learned as a gamer and Minecraft server administrator, I noticed that I have like probably the longest or second longest subtitle. I do like subtitles. What I want to talk about today is really two games. But I also want to talk about more generally, computer gaming in general. And I have to begin by kind of narrowing my topic a little bit here. When I first got into computer gaming, the reason I wanted to get it was my friend had an Atari 2600. And so, you know, I saw him playing, you know, the classics like Space Invaders and Defender on his Atari 2600. I wanted that, right? And then my father had the brilliant idea of, no, we're not getting an Atari 2600. We're getting a TRS-80 color computer, which is like, okay, I guess that's okay. Yeah, and it comes with all these games. They were actually mostly pirated games that the Radio Shack salesman had given him along with the computer. It's like, oh, okay, well, there's lots of games. This is great. So that was my introduction. And as soon as I started fiddling around with the computer and fiddling around with programming in BASIC and learning to program, I realized this could be a really great way for me as a solo gamer to actually get into gaming. But I actually didn't turn out to be that interested in the action games like Pitfall or Space Invaders or Defenders, because they didn't quite give you the experience that I had fallen in love with as somebody immersing myself in the worlds of Lewis and Tolkien and Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury and all these other amazing authors who are creating just, you know, worlds that draw you in that we were just hearing about, right? Those amazing worlds. That's what I wanted. But fortunately, as I persisted, wargaming was a little bit easier because, you know, lots of rules and lots of math, and that translates really well into computers. But eventually you started to get games that were more interactive fiction. So if any of you are old enough to remember Zork by Infocom, which was one of the first great text adventures on PC, I played that. Wasn't actually that taken with it. I mean, on some level I was, because just being able to type into the parser, open the mailbox and get out the letter and read it, you know, that was amazing. That was kind of miraculous. I could tell the computer what to do and it would do it. What I found with some of those early interactive fiction adventure games, though, was that a lot of it was really just delayed gratification by putting a bunch of puzzles in your way. And still to this day, a lot of computer gaming is really just delayed gratification, especially narrative gaming, is delayed gratification by putting puzzles in your way. And if you get stuck on a puzzle, it's really annoying. It's like, and this is before the days of the internet where, you know, if you wanted a hint, you actually had to phone up Infocom's dedicated hint line and talk to somebody, a person who wants to talk to a person. There was a certain lack of or dissatisfaction with the experience of this, because that was, again, it still wasn't quite what I wanted. And I should also pause for a second and say here, I'm not necessarily dissing, you know, those classic games like Pitfall or Adventure was kind of sort of an adventure game, or you know, all of these other action games or platformers, which I am terrible at. There are things that one can get out of those that are valuable, you know, even if it's just like improved hand-eye coordination. Okay, well, you know, there's something to be said for that. That's probably why I suck at those games. But what I find actually much more valuable and deep is an engagement with story. And more than that, an immersive engagement with story. So when we get into good literature, one of the things that we do is we lose ourselves in the characters to some extent. There's this wonderful poem by a Canadian children's author called Jean Little that I wasn't able to find. I had it somewhere in the house that I moved away from years ago, it basically says that she basically talks about being able to experience life as other people. I think that's one of the great gifts that fiction gives us. As we engage with fiction, as we read fiction, you know, on some level, even fiction is often dismissed as, it's a waste of time. I mean, I remember I grew up in a Protestant Christian church where, you know, you really were just supposed to read the Bible, because that's the only one, the only real book worth reading. And anything else is just a waste of time. Even C.S. Lewis was like, kind of questionable. we do struggle with this question. Is this all a waste of time? And, you know, there's that verse in the Bible, like, when I became a child, I put away childish things, right? And so, you know, am I being childish by enjoying this fiction or by enjoying this game or by enjoying, you know, whatever it is that we're doing? And I think it's a good question to be asking ourselves, actually, because there is this danger that we were talking about a little earlier, that, you know, you can lose oneself in it in a way that isn't necessarily healthy. Escapism, as Tolkien says, is great if you're a prisoner, because a prisoner's duty is to escape. But at the same time, there is something that is potentially dangerous about this. So I want to how to keep this dynamic tension between the two, but I particularly want to share with you some of my most precious experiences as a gamer. First of all, in the classic, actually, I don't know when it was released offhand, but the classic open world space game called Starflight, which if you're old enough, will you know anything about this game? And so there will be spoilers here. I do recommend, if you can find a copy of Starflight, I think it's out there somewhere on the internet. It's definitely worth playing, but, you know, I'll spoil it because you probably won't go and do it. And, you know, some of going back and playing it again, some of the gameplay doesn't age as well as it might. But what was amazing about Starflight? So first of all, let me set the stage here. You are in on a world called Arth. Very creative title. It's not Earth, Arth, and your culture has just discovered faster than light travel. So you're just starting out in this exploratory phase in the like early Star Trek universe kind of thing. And your spaceship actually looks kind of like a Star Trek Enterprise style spaceship. And you have a captain and a navigator and a science officer and a medical officer. And what's the other one? There's, did I say mechanic already? Anyhow, so you're on this starship. You are the captain of this starship. Going out to boldly go where no one has gone before. No, they don't actually say that. But so your job is to actually seek out new life forms and new civilizations. I think that's actually in there. And so you start by going off out into the unknown. And you can first of all go to like another planet, and you can start mining or analyzing life forms, and you can land. One of the cool things about this game, like it's early computer games. I think it still ran on DOS, and it actually had an animated landing sequence where you could see in 3D your spaceship descending to the surface of the planet, and there was a topographical map overlaid it. And one of the reasons I haven't done a PowerPoint presentation is because the graphics don't age well. In my mind, this was amazing, like amazing 3D graph, and it was just like so immersive, because here I was, this captain of the starship, going out and exploring these planets and mining them for various minerals, including a very important one called Endurium, which was the fuel that you needed to do faster than light travel. And so I'm going around mining planets for various minerals and resources, analyzing new life forms. And eventually you get out and you start meeting other alien races, which is really cool. And you can communicate with these various alien races, and they have different personalities. So like there's the Spemen, which they kind of look like blobs or potatoes or something like that. But they act real tough. It's like, we are the great and glorious Spemen. You'll bow to us, and so on. And then you realize that they have lousy weapons and they're actually just kind of idiots. But okay. And then there's the Thryn, which are a race of lizard people. So if obviously the lizards have developed and evolved, and the Thryn, they're very clever, and they're very they like to trade, and so you can easily make friends with them. So I did, I'm basically I want to make friends with everybody, right? So I'm out there, and I'm trading with the Thryn, and they're giving me information and secrets and stuff like that. And then there's a peaceful plant-based race called the Illoans. They're not friends with the Thryn. You can imagine why, right? Lizards eat plants, so they don't get along with one another, but they'll get along with me, right? And so they're actually one of the most beautiful, loving races around. They're completely peaceful. And then there's this really dangerous race. All of these races, by the way, you can communicate with. So you put them on the hailing channel, comms, and you can see what they look like. And again, I didn't share them because, they look much better in my mind's eye than they actually look in the pixelated graphics of that day. So I'm out there in space, and one of the things I particularly love about this game, and here I'm like, as a gamer, I want to share lessons in game design. If you are writing a narrative open world game, make sure that it's not, there's no puzzle blockers. There's none of these puzzles that are in the way of progression. And Starflight did an amazing job of that because it had various artifacts and hints and logs that were scattered all over the universe, so that you would go and explore and find hints and clues pointing you to other locations. And there were multiple paths that you could follow. And there's actually, I just was just reading the Wikipedia article on it and realizing, oh, there's like a whole subplot that I completely missed because it's a literally an open world game. And so now I have to go back and play it and actually complete the game. So anyhow, I'm oh yes, and one more. There's other alien races, but the one more that I really need to share about for this story's purposes are the Ulek. So again, you could communicate with everybody and hail them and see them on screen, except for the Ulek. The Ulek would not communicate with you. As soon as you came and you identified them as Ulek, they would start firing on you, and they were just this terrible threat to the galaxy. And so here I am, as I say, I'm the starship captain. I'm going through space. I am trading with people. I'm finding out in different information about, eventually you find out that there's this wave of explosions that is spreading through the galaxy and is actually threatening your own home star system. And so the kind of big mystery that you're trying to find out is, why are star systems exploding? Why are these stars exploding? And we'll get to that in a minute. At one point in the game, the Thryn, who I, as I say, they trade with them and they give me information. They gave me information about a planet-destroying bomb, and they said they would share the location of this planet-destroying bomb with me, so that I could then take that planet-destroying bomb and then hyperspace into the Ulek homeworld, which they would give me the coordinates for, and then plant that planet-destroying bomb and destroy the Ulek homeworld. So okay, this is great. I've developed a relationship with the Thryn. I go to the coordinates that they give me, and I find, oh, there's the planet destroying bomb. It looks like a black egg, but it must be what they've said it is. I come back, and they give me the coordinates for the Ulek homeworld. It's like, okay, this is great. I've finally rid the galaxy of this alien menace that everybody hates. They destroy and attack everybody. And so I warp in, go down to the surface of the planet, plant the planet destroying bomb, go back up to my ship, activate the bomb, and all of a sudden I hear this over the comms, this terrible wailing outcry from all of the Alowans. I've just been tricked by the Thrin into destroying the entire homeworld of this peaceful, beautiful alien race, the Alowans. I was furious. I was so angry that I began to hunt down and blow into interstellar space dust every single Thrin ship that I could possibly find. So for the next few hours, that was me. Oh, there's a Thrin ship. Eat torpedoes. You're gone. Okay, let's find another one. Until I suddenly realized, wait a second. I'm mad at the Thrin for controlling me. They're still controlling me. My hatred of them is controlling me, giving them still control over me. Now, as a Christian, you know, I grew up in a Christian household. I know hatred is bad. You shouldn't hate people. you should love everybody. And but of course, I hadn't necessarily been, you know, I'm still a kid. I haven't necessarily been really faced with the necessity of loving my enemy. And here in this game world, immersed in this game world as I was, I actually had the experience of hating, like literally hating an enemy. And I came to the realization myself, not through anything that anybody told me, that anyone told me, that that hatred was controlling me. And so it was like a revelation. Now, this is kind of why I feel like, okay, yeah, gaming isn't necessarily the most efficient way to come to a realization like this. You don't get very, I haven't, at least in my life experience, got terribly many of these kind of life-changing experiential revelations out of the various games that I've played. But it can and does happen. And it happens in gaming in an environment which is safe for this to happen, where I can actually learn from my mistakes without other people, actually without other civilizations being blown up as a result, you know, without other people having to pay the consequence. And so this is, I think, one of the things that gaming, particularly narrative gaming, which allows for this higher level of engagement and immersion, can actually really help us to grow and learn. So actually, this was then the basis for the proposal that I made many years later. So fast forward, I'm now a teacher at a high school. I'm actually the tech guy. I still am the computer teacher at the mostly Christian distance learning school that I work for, Traditional Learning Academy. We have students all over the province of British Columbia. And I go, and I've got this new game that my kids want to play called Minecraft. So I thought, okay, well, this actually sounds like it could be something useful for the students of the school, because they're scattered all over. Most of their classes are online. They don't actually get a chance to interact with or play with one another. They would like this. This can be a virtual playground, right? And I also was thinking about this partly as I also like to teach like English. So I'm actually by training an English social studies teacher. And one of the things that kids often struggle with when they're writing English is, well, what do I write about? Right? Tell you, give them a piece of paper and blank piece of paper, and it's kind of staring in the face. I don't know what to write about. So my thought here was that, well, this would give them something to write about, right? And so I approached the principal of the school and said, hey, can I get your permission to do an experiment? I would like to start up a Minecraft server for the school. And she said, okay, yeah, let's do that. And I was really grateful actually that I used the word experiment It wasn't something that I actually thought about very deeply at the time. But I used the word experiment, and I realized afterwards, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I realized afterwards that was kind of freeing. You know, I did pretty well in school. And one of the things that anybody who does pretty well in school, especially if you're a perfectionist, is they have their perfectionism, you know, reinforced, like more and more. And so that failure is not an option. That's actually really dangerous, because we learn far more through failure than we do through study, at least most of us do. And some of those, just as I did in, you know, my lesson that I learned in blowing up the Thrin, right? I failed. So here I am, I'm starting up this Minecraft server as kind of like a virtual playground for the school. And I don't really have a whole lot of experience with it, but I like the game Minecraft, and it's kind of a sandbox game, right? You can go anywhere in this world and dig and mine and craft and do all these things and interact with one another on a server. And the kids were obviously enthusiastic, like, oh, this is great. The school is giving us a virtual playground. We can play Minecraft together. Let's go and play together. And it was a really an idyllic community, like in every sense of the word. So I chose a nice biome with rolling hills and grasslands. And when new students came in, I would come bounding over the grasslands and say, here, have a pickaxe. Here, have a shovel. Here, you can, I'll help you out in getting your start here in this Minecraft world. And everything was wonderful. The kids were playing together. They were happy. It was wonderful. I built myself a tower because, you know, I wanted a bit of role playing. So I was King Edward III, Lord of the TLA Mines. And I had Diamond Tower with the great diamond throne room. And I had a nice big diamond throne in the throne room. And, you know, I would hold audience there. And so everything was wonderful. And I decided I was going to go off and do some exploration, because Minecraft is also about exploration. So I was like, I'm having fun. I'm going to go out and do some exploration and come back and talk to the community about what I found. And when I came back, my diamond throne room was destroyed. And the diamond blocks that had formed my diamond throne were stolen. And all of a sudden, I was kind of, in this case, I wasn't so much mad. It was actually more hurt. And what I realized in that moment, you gotta understand, as a Minecraft server administrator, I have creative mode. I can do anything. I can build anything. I have access to all the resources at my fingertips. Basically, in this world, I am God, right? Maybe small g God. It was just the work of a moment, would have been just the work of a moment for me to restore my diamond throne room. The broken walls, the stolen diamonds from the throne, easy. What I could not repair was the trust that had been shattered, that was the basis of that community. And I suddenly realized what God felt when we turned our backs on him. He's God. Like, he can just like destroy the earth and start over again. But he loves us and he wants a relationship with us. And we betrayed that trust that he had given us. And that could not be so easily repaired. So at this point, I didn't necessarily quite know what to do. So I rebuilt my diamond throne room and kind of continued on. And then we had a newspaper, again, I was trying to encourage writing, so called the Almost Daily News. And anybody could post anything they wanted to the newspaper. And then I'm going off on exploration again. And then as I come back, I realize, oh, there's a new post in the Almost Daily News. So I go to the Almost Daily News and read that. And there in the news, I read that there's been an assassination attempt on King Edward III's life. Now, of course, in Minecraft, if you get killed, it's not a big deal, right? You just respawn in your bed. But some clever student had decided that they were going to put a continuous lava stream right above my bed, so that when I woke up, I would be killed by the lava, and then I would wake up and then be killed by the lava, and then in kind of an interminable hell of an existence. Very clever, but it got found out because I didn't die. That's how most assassination attempts fail, of course, is the guy doesn't die, right? So I didn't die. It got scooped in the Almost Daily News. But then what happened in the community was that everybody wanted to know who did it. Was it him? Was it him? Was it that person? Oh, I noticed something went missing the other day. Maybe it was this person. Maybe this person. And suddenly the whole community was being destroyed from within by this mutual suspicion that everybody had of everybody else. And so now I was presented with an even more dangerous and more difficult dilemma. It wasn't something personal for me. It wasn't a matter of, okay, well, my trust has been broken, but how do I keep this community from imploding? And it kind of was a twofold solution. One was I needed to be a little more like God. I needed to be omniscient so I could actually know who. So here I had the Minecraft is moddable. And so I got a Minecraft mod and I put it on the server, and our modded version of Minecraft re-implemented the server such that I had logging ability so I could see who did this. Because this was the early days of Minecraft. So this wasn't like ubiquitous at the time. But the more important aspect of the solution that I realized was necessary was what I call the commitment. I went to every one of the students and said, okay, if you want to continue in the server, I went to all the new students and say, if you want to join the server, you must agree to this commitment. And the commitment is very simple. I will respect all other players and their in-game persons and property at all times. It's essentially a disguised version of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And then, of course, I had to turn policeman, right? Because there were inevitably, well, this person said this to me in chat, and that person took my diamond pickaxe, and the other person did, and now I could actually investigate this and enforce the rules. And what I ended up finding, I almost at some points referred to Minecraft as my virtual church, because the most effective method of discipline was essentially excommunication. You ban them. It's like you have violated the basic commitment that unites us as a community, and so you are out of the community until you apologize. And that was also a really important aspect. Was excommunication is not. It's not sending you to hell forever. It's saying this is not a part of the community. This does not meet the community standards. And so the whole idea behind excommunication, which Paul points out in 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians actually, 2 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, he talks about the need to excommunicate someone. And by 2 Corinthians, he's saying, come on, the guy's repented already. Bring him back. That was the whole point, right? You hand him over to Satan, so he knows he's not acting within the bounds of the community, within the bounds of tradition, right? And so so essentially that's what I did. It's like I was the priest of this community. I guess I stepped down from God, so that's probably good. I ended up having to do, a fair number of these disciplinary actions, and I would tell them, okay, well, you should apologize to the person that you took the diamond pickaxe from, and, if you can, should restore it. I didn't say restore it fourfold, but anyhow. And then at the end of the year, I've actually now kept this going for like more than 10 years, I'm talking now about the first year. At the end of the year, I felt like, okay, well, we've had this experiment. I should probably get them to say something about their experience of playing on the server and how it was educational for them. And I was expecting, because everybody is in survival except me, I was expecting them to say stuff like, I learned that if I want to build something really big, I have to plan ahead and like marshal my resources, and sometimes, and maybe even something like, well, and it's helpful to like have other people involved in the project, and yeah, so things like that. And I got a few of those posts. But what was really of interest to me, especially given that I was actually fairly worried about having to be so heavy-handed in the disciplinary aspect of running this server. Because I was pretty strict. I would like, okay, you did this. I've investigated, found out you did this. I'm going to tell your parents, and I'm going to ban you until and but the overwhelming majority of the responses that I received was that what they had learned from playing in my Minecraft server was that multiplayer gaming can be a safe and enjoyable space. And all of a sudden, I realized, again, not intellectually, but experientially, that this is why the Jewish people understood the law as a gift from God. I mean, they might have had a few other reasons to understand it as that, you know, like the cloud up on the mountain, that Moses coming down with the Ten Commandments in his arms. But what their descendants who didn't see that, they still thought of this as a gift from God. Why? Because their experience of the law was that it was good, that it was life-giving, that as it was applied in a way that the prophet said, you know, justice should not be delayed. There should actually be, you know, judges are really important. As it was applied properly, it brought people together. It made people able to live together and work together and be together. And so, this was, again, for me, it's the stuff I knew, right? I knew it intellectually, but now I know it experientially. And that's so much more powerful and deep and important. And not just me, the others as well, also who were participating in the server, learned this experientially as well. And so I don't want to be an apologist for, you know, you should spend all of your time playing role-playing video games, you know, open world video games. That's the way to go. That's like, you don't need to read the Bible. You know, it's like, no, it's not what I'm saying. But I do think that, and the reason I chose the as my title, Mining Play for Pearls, that as we experience the world through play, whether that be in video gaming or, you know, RPGs or Dungeons and Dragons or Magic the Gathering or playing Monopoly. If we engage with play in a way that is both fun, willing to experiment, willing to make mistakes, willing to fail, and also serious, where I'm actually invested in my character and what it does and the consequences of their actions, actually invested and thinking about what I'm doing. So like I, for example, the contrast I want to make here is maybe between, you know, somebody who plays Grand Theft Auto for you know, the explosions and mayhem. Okay, well, you know, there's, I suppose there's some good in that, but it's mostly not going to be helpful, right? Like, there's not a lot of explosions and mayhem in real life, and when there are, it's bad. So, you know, you really don't want to pursue that. But on the other hand, somebody who plays something like Red Dead Redemption 2 as Arthur Morgan, who is a villain, right? He's an outlaw, can still learn from this experience, realizing that there are consequences to one's actions that are important and deep and really powerfully felt and understood as we are immersed in them. This can be a really valuable and life-giving experience in the same way as great literature can be. Because again, just reading a whole bunch of books is not necessarily going to be edifying. It's not necessarily going to provide you with wisdom. But I would say if you take those books seriously, you do have an opportunity to immerse yourself in another person's life experience, to get a fuller empathetic understanding of somebody who is in the experience that is being narrated in the book. And one of the things that I think is really interesting, and perhaps somebody who's an author can comment on this more effectively, is I think that an author really needs to actually love all of their characters, the good and the evil, on some level. Because if you're going to write them in a way that is going to be truthful, and as somebody who, like, I've read lots of science fiction, I've read the pulp stuff, and, you know, it's just, it's really just explosions and in space, right? But there's also stuff in there that is deep and true and accords with our real lived human experience, and that we can learn from in a deep experiential way that gives us a fuller understanding of life, a fuller understanding of the other, a fuller understanding of what it really means to love your enemy, to do good to those who hate you, to pray for those who despitefully use you, and to act as Christ did, as he came down and united himself with us in our fallen human condition and brought us back to communion with God through his sacrifice, through his revelation of what evil does to the innocent and the good, and through his revelation that that is not the end. Repentance is also available, and resurrection and newness of life is available through the forgiveness of God and the reconciliation with him that is our faith, and that is, I would say, the basis of the deeper spiritual experience and reality that we are all drawn to and pursuing as we play games, as we read books, as we geek out together about, you know, all of this stuff.